The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Welcome to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. I'm your host, Mike Mason. The issue of the proposed Pebble Mine was the main topic of discussion during a town hall meeting Thursday night in Dillingham that featured Alaska's senior U.S. Senator. We'll have a report in a moment. We'll also hear from a prominent fisheries journalist about the impact that Silver Bay Seafoods is having on the commercial fishing industry in Alaska, and more specifically, the fishery in Bristol Bay. The program will also feature a remembrance of longtime fisheries journalist Bob Tocatz, and we'll check in with the Coast Guard about their free fishing vessel safety inspections that will be available in June. All of that and more is coming up on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. I'm Mike Mason. The U.S. Coast Guard is sending safety inspectors to the Bristol Bay region next month in advance of fishermen putting their vessels in the water. Fishermen involved in Bristol Bay's massive sockeye salmon fishery are getting ready for the upcoming season. In recent days, there's been a lot of activity at the boatyards in Naknek, King Salmon, Dillingham, and other areas around the bay. U.S. Coast Guard plans to send fishing vessel safety inspectors to the region in June to help get fishermen ready for the season. Inspectors will be in the Naknek, King Salmon, and Dillingham areas from June the 9th through the 20th. Coast Guard plans to have inspectors in the Igigik area from June the 9th through the 13th. Chief Petty Officer John Jones is with the Coast Guard's Fishing Vessel Safety Detachment. He'll be one of the inspectors coming to the region. He says the best way for fishermen to let the Coast Guard know they are ready for a free voluntary inspection is to put a life ring way up high in the vessel's mast.
All the teams will be driving around from yard to yard looking for that Batman signal in the sky, so to speak. So once you're ready, throw that life ring up and we'll pay you a visit.
Fishermen that are ready for an inspection can also call Coast Guard Sector Anchorage at 907-428-4154 to get their name on the inspection list. Chief Jones is recommending that fishermen take the time to make sure they are ready for the detailed fishing vessel safety inspections. He says one of the best things to do is to take a look at the immersion suits on board your vessel.
The batteries and the Coast Guard approved light has to be changed out annually. The zipper needs to be waxed. All of the pieces that are associated with the immersion suit need to be attached. Some of the older suits have bladders that you can zip on, zip off, so those have to be on there.
Chief Jones suggests that fishermen also check their flares and the expiration dates on EPIRBs. The Coast Guard fishing vessel safety inspections are essentially voluntary, but Chief Jones says in some cases the inspections become mandatory.
If you are utilizing one of our Coast Guard exemptions that allows you to operate with a lesser amount of safety gear, for example, a survival craft, we have a survival craft exemption for King Salmon that allows you to operate with four or fewer people while you're out there fishing. If you're using that exemption letter, then you have to have a current fishing vessel safety decal. So that's the caveat. The nationwide mandatory exam authorization bill, that's scheduled to go into effect October of 2015. And so we still have, you know, just about a year or so until we're there. And that's where it will become mandatory regardless of your operation.
Chief Jones confirms that as part of the inspections, fishermen will be given the opportunity to address any discovered safety equipment deficiencies. He says the examiners won't issue any fines or impose other penalties for problems they discover on board a vessel. Chief Jones is hoping that fishermen take advantage of the free fishing vessel safety exams. However, he is asking for patience.
We're kind of slim this year due to other operations and personnel shortages going on. So just be patient with us. We'll get to you as soon as we can. And I just want to wish everyone a happy and a safe season.
Fishermen who wanted to make sure that they are ready for an inspection can go online to the Coast Guard approved website, fishsafe.info. They can also find a detailed pre-examination checklist on that website. Once again, the U.S. Coast Guard will have free fishing vessel safety examinations in the Bristol Bay region from June the 9th through the 13th. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, representing fishermen since 1966. More information at AIFMA.org.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski made a visit to the Bristol Bay region Thursday and Friday. She met privately with local elders and community leaders before touring the Kanakanak Hospital and Peter Pan's Seafood Plant in Dillingham. Thursday evening, Senator Murkowski held a town hall-style meeting that featured well over 200 residents from across the Bristol Bay region. The first person invited to speak was Dillingham Mayor Alice Ruby. She brought up several issues, including the recent diesel fuel spills in the region's pristine coastal environment.
But it did bring to our attention that we're just not prepared for that. And with all of the passage, the new shipping routes, we're really not prepared for that.
Over 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel was spilled into the Nooshigak River May the 14th when a vessel struck something in the river that punctured a fuel tank. Ruby also referenced last summer's sinking of a tender in the Agushik River that essentially resulted in the closure of the Agushik River set net fishery for much of the season due to the resulting diesel fuel spill. Senator Murkowski asserts that there needs to be more work done to make sure that Alaska is prepared for just such emergencies.
We can have a debate or a discussion about whether or not a development up in the Beaufort Chukchi is good thing, bad thing, going to come soon, going to come later. The fact of the matter is, with or without development up in the Arctic, we are going to continue to see an increasing flow of commercial vessel traffic around our coast. It is just our reality. And it's not the fishing boats that we're used to seeing. It's going to be all kinds of different boats, everything from cruise ships to container ships. And so we as a state, in my view, working with our Coast Guard, have to have a better level of preparedness. So this is something that we've been working on with our coastal communities, with our Coast Guard. We need to get the rest of the country committed and believing that this is not just an Alaska issue, this is something that benefits us as an Arctic nation.
The vast majority of the comments made during Thursday night's town hall meeting were specifically focused on the proposed Pebble Mine and some of the ancillary issues surrounding the mine. Tom Tilden from Dillingham is a commercial fisherman and the first chief of the Chogyang Tribal Council. He spoke up in strong support for the EPA's efforts to use its authority under the Clean Water Act to basically block development of the mine by denying needed permits to dredge and fill in wetlands.
And when Congress created the Clean Water Act, they created a masterpiece that has survived 46 years. And in that 46 years of survival, it has undergone challenge after challenge after challenge by congressional, judicial, court systems. And it lives today just to protect the water. And when I look at House Senate Bill 2156, I see it as a weakening of that masterpiece legislation. I don't want to see that happen. I plead with you to change your mind in regard to co-sponsoring Senate Bill 2156.
Senator Murkowski recently added her name as a co-sponsor to the Regulatory Fairness Act of 2014 that seeks to modify when and how the EPA can use the Section 404C authority given the agency in the Clean Water Act. Several times during Thursday's town hall meeting, Senator Murkowski was forced to explain her reasoning for co-sponsoring the legislation.
This legislation does not impact the ability for the EPA to say, no, this mine does not work. You cannot meet the standards to provide for the level of protection for our waters and for our fisheries. The bill was not designed to influence Pebble. The bill was introduced by a senator from West Virginia who in his state had a coal mine that had gone through all of the permitting process, through all of the agencies, through the Corps and through the EPA. And the mine had been permitted. And the mine was in operation for 4 years. And it's my understanding that that mine was not out of compliance, that there were not issues that had gone against the terms of the permit. But the EPA retroactively vetoed the permit. I don't think that it is right that you could have a situation where you have gone entirely through the process, you've done everything that was called for, it was given the stamp of approval by all the levels of government, state and federal, and then to have the agency say, no, we've changed our mind. So I have looked at this legislation as an issue of process for a regulatory agency. And I understand, because I have heard from so many of you, that you're looking at it from the perspective of, if this can give me certainty that we won't have pebble, then that's what I want. But I do need to let you know that the only way that there is certainty here is if a permit is submitted, which we have not yet seen. We all know that. I've asked to see it. I want to know what the size and scope of this thing is we're talking about. Because once it is submitted, the EPA can exercise its veto fully and cleanly under the 404C. Right now, we don't know if there's going to be a permit. There may never be.
As currently written, the Regulatory Fairness Act of 2014 would eliminate the ability for the EPA to use its 404C veto authority preemptively. That's just what the agency is in the process of doing for the proposed Pebble Mine. That process was widely supported among those who showed up for Thursday night's town hall meeting. However, Senator Murkowski never backed away from her support for the act. She did stress that she got the message that protecting the salmon, the water, and the environment is vital to the people of the Bristol Bay region.
I have no intention, would never want to support anything that would put in jeopardy the health and the livelihood and really the spiritual and cultural aspect of our people. And so, when we foul our waters and we ruin our resource, that's not something that I could support. I believe in good, responsible development of our resources. I think nowadays our technologies are allowing us to do some amazing things, things that we could never do. But maybe this project that is the subject of tonight's clear passion and emotion, maybe this project is just not possible. And if it is just not possible because we cannot ensure that our waters are not fouled and our fisheries, the greatest fishery in the world, if that can't be protected, then it doesn't work. And so know that I am not working against you in that. I know that none of you have ever heard me state that I support the Pebble Mine, because I never have. Never said it in writing, never said it in words. What I've said is, I'm not quite sure what Pebble has in mind. I don't know whether that 2005 plan is what is still in play or not. I do know that Anglo walked away from it, and I do know that Rio Tinto walked away from it, so something must not be right there. But what I hear very clearly is that the people in this region are seeking certainty that there will be no threats to you and your livelihood and your resources.
In addition to Thursday night's town hall meeting in Dillingham, Senator Murkowski also held similar meetings in Togiak and Neustuyahok. She also toured the Peter Pan's processing plant in Dillingham and the Togiak Seafoods plant in Togiak. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported Public Radio KDLG. The report will continue in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Crawley, fueling Alaska for more than 60 years with a full range of residential, commercial, aviation, and marine fuel products, and supporting local fisheries offshore with Bristol Bay Floater Fueling Services. More information at CrawleyFuels.com.
You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. Silver Bay Seafoods is set to enter the Bristol Bay sockeye salmon fishery as their new massive processing plant on the shore of the Naknek River is now up and running. John Sacton is one of the most prominent fisheries journalists in the country, and he's been closely watching the business model being used by Silver Bay Seafoods. Sacton writes for SeafoodNews.com, and he recently posted some comments online. He says there is a new fight brewing in the seafood industry in Alaska.
In my view, there's two ways to make money with fish. One is to use a high volume throughput to sell it as a commodity, keep your costs at an absolute minimum, and of course then you're subject to the swings and volatility of a commodity market. The other way is to build a brand, to spend money on value-added products, to invest in sales force and promotion, marketing, and developing long-term customer relationships. And in this way, you build up a protected demand for your product among your customers who rely on your specs, your relation to quality, et cetera, et cetera. And Silver Bay is following the first path, the high-volume, low-cost commodity throughput, and basically setting up a pipeline to deliver millions and millions of pounds of H&G salmon directly to China. What happens to it after that is of no concern of theirs. Other processors, even though they also use packing in China to some extent, are much more concerned about maintaining brand identity, riding the premium that they can get through an Alaska brand of fish, and maintaining the long-term customer relationships.
Sacton is predicting that there will be some disruption this year in the salmon processing industry in Alaska as the two different business models play out this season.
In many ways, the Silver Bay model is akin to Walmart, and Walmart has had a very disruptive impact on retailing. I think what we're going to see over the next few years is a battle that happening in Alaska where this type of disruption that gives harvesters the option of opting for a very high volume, low cost, high throughput model versus a longer term relationship model gives them a choice. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do.
Silver Bay Seafoods was founded in 2007 by commercial fishermen who Sacton report were tired of being put on limits by traditional processors. 80% of Silver Bay Seafoods is owned by fishermen, and the company has plants in Naknek, Sitka, Valdez, and Craig. This will be Silver Bay's first season in Bristol Bay, and the company has reportedly signed up many of the highest producing fishermen in the bay. The company is also promising high prices and has apparently already promised $2 a pound this upcoming season. Another issue that differentiates Silver Bay Seafoods from many of the other more established large seafood processors in Alaska has to do with sustainability labels. Silver Bay is one of the major supporters of the Marine Stewardship Council label, and they are just one of the small number of companies allowed to use the MSC label. Most of the other large processors have rejected MSC in favor of the RFM label, sponsored by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Silver Bay's new plant in Naknek is 53,000 square feet in size, and the plant will have a capacity to process about 2.4 million pounds of product a day during the sockeye season. Current plan is for the plant to primarily produce H&G and fillets with a workforce of about 250. Last year, the company was saying they plan to buy about 18% of this year's drift net harvest out of Bristol Bay. The sockeye season will officially get started on the 2nd of June. It will be interesting to see if Silver Bay Seafoods actually meets that goal. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
This is listener-supported Public Radio KDLG. I'm Mike Mason. The commercial fishing industry in Alaska is huge and a major driver of the economy. However, there are not a lot of journalists dedicated to covering the industry. There's now one less. Veteran journalist Bob Dukach was found dead in his Juneau office on Tuesday. No foul play is suspected, but the exact cause of death is not yet known. Bob Dukach ran the newsletter called Laws for the Sea, which was focused on the commercial fishing industry, but he also wrote for a number of news organizations and was a fixture covering the Alaska legislature. State Senator Hollis French was saddened to hear of Dukach's death. French appreciated his work ethic and style and says Dukach's guiding principle was to ferret out the truth.
Bob Dukach was not after the soundbite. He was really digging down to get the bedrock. And that's so unusual in any pursuit, but it's especially important in the press to go beyond the surface, you know, glib, quick answer and bear down on the facts and get to the underlying reality.
Bob Dukach was 61 years old and was well known in Juneau for asking tough questions and demanding answers of those in positions of power. Hollis French says Dukach followed his own path and was not part of today's modern soundbite culture.
Bob marched to his own drummer. He wrote his own newsletter, and it was lengthy and informative, and he had the space to, you know, flesh out issues at some length, and he had the independence of mind to pursue what he thought were the most important stories. So, you know, he was a one-of-a-kind guy, a great Alaskan, a unique Alaskan, and everyone's going to miss him.
Alaska Governor Sean Parnell issued a statement Thursday expressing sadness upon a learning of Bob Dukach's death. The governor noted that Bob's persistence and understanding of Alaska government and issues will be missed. Former KDLG News Director Bob King was saddened to hear the news of Bob Dukach's death. King worked with Dukach as a journalist, but also had to answer his tough questions when King was the press secretary for Governor Tony Knowles. King is now a staffer with Senator Mark Begich, and he says Dukach was one of the few journalists who focused on Alaska's commercial fisheries.
He saw a niche there and dug into it with great detail, with great attention. He remembered things, and he followed through and followed up. A lot of these issues are, in fisheries, seem to go on forever, for years and years and years. But he never forgot and would always would follow up and did a good job. And that's some of the basics of good reporting. And for a sector like commercial fisheries, which is so big in Alaska's economy, I feel is really underreported. There are people like yourself and Laney and Margie Baum and Wesley Loy and the like, but there are not many who really follow it on a long-term continual basis. And someone who brought the added perspective of following it through the legislature is going to be sorely missed.
The Alaska House Democratic Caucus issued a statement Thursday noting that Dukach was an excellent political reporter who routinely demanded straight information. Representative Les Guerra from Anchorage characterized Dukach's death as a loss for those who care about open, accountable government. House Minority Leader Chris Tuck is quoted as saying that the Capitol press conferences actually will be considerably less lively without Bob. The Bethel test fishery put nets in the water 5 days early this year. With no salmon fishing happening in the early season, the test data will be central to understanding the strength of the king run and helping managers decide when to open up for another species. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
In its 30 years of operations, the Bethel test fishery has begun drifting June 1st. This year, crews started May 27th. Kevin Schaberg is a research biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Breakup was pretty early this year, and reports from around the state and on the Kuskokwim was that fish were coming in a little bit early here and there.
Crews have caught both king and sockeye salmon in the first couple days of operations. And given this year's severe king salmon restrictions, Schaberg is expecting many more king salmon to come through the test waters relative to typical years when people have been fishing below Bethel.
This year, everybody knows, is a very different year. This is something that I don't know if we've ever seen on the Kuskokwim River as far as lack of harvest at this time of the year. So interpretation of the Bethel test fishery is going to take a little bit longer to get a really solid signal on whether we think the run's doing well or very well or very poor.
Shaberg says there's no perfect way to measure the impact of people not catching kings. There is, however, an anticipated cultural and social harvest of about 1,000 kings beginning in June in federal waters. There are detailed reporting requirements about where and when the kings were caught that will add some data to the manager's toolbox. Knowing the species mix from the Bethel test fishery and how kings are moving upriver is critical for the mid part of June when managers plan to open a dipnet fishery for other species of salmon and for the last week of June when they hope to have short gillnet openings. On Thursday morning, representatives from Bethel's tribe ONC picked up a small tote box of test fishery king salmon bound for elders' meals at Bethel's Senior Center. The tribe is helping distribute those fish during the summer. Shaberg says it's good to get the catch out to people on the river and adds that about a quarter of the fish actually survive.
We count those fish. We record it as a captured fish. But, you know, if it looks like it's a healthy fish, we put that fish back in the water. We don't want to kill fish if we don't have to kill fish.
Other research initiatives this summer include having lower river fishermen collecting scales to estimate age and sex composition. And in early July, a Yukon River sonar crew will come to evaluate sites for a possible sonar project. Fish and Game has upgraded the presentation of the raw Bethel Test Fishery Index online. A link is posted at kyuk.org. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in just a moment here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The new year will likely bring new fisheries to the Western Aleutian Islands now that the National Marine Fisheries Service has issued its final report on the way that commercial fishing affects an endangered population of Steller sea lions. The agency came out in favor of allowing more fishing in its Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS. This is a major move for NIMS. As recently as 2010, the agency was trying to close fishing grounds in the Bering Sea and Aleutians. Biologists didn't want the Steller sea lions to have to compete with fishermen for pollock, Atka mackerel, and Pacific cod. But the fishing industry argued that there wasn't enough scientific proof that commercial harvests were putting pressure on the endangered species. The issue went to court, and a federal judge ordered NIMS to go back to the drawing board. The agency was required to come up with the new Environmental Impact Statement, which looks at the scientific and economic implications of different protection plans. Last year, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council told biologists they preferred an option that would relax some bans on commercial fishing. It would allow a small pollock harvest near Adak, for instance. NIMS has been studying that plan ever since. The agency ruled that more fishing at certain times of the year in certain areas is not likely to jeopardize sea lions. Now NIMS will start turning that into a federal regulation. It could go into effect as early as January of 2015. That concludes this edition of KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be heard during June and July each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 4 p.m. You can listen to the report online through our website, kdlg.org. And if you have something to add, a correction, or background information, you can pass that along by sending me an email to mike@kdlg.org, or you can call 842-5281. Until next time, please be safe, watch the weather, and stay tuned to Bristol Bay's public radio station, KDLG.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Power up with safety. Overloaded extension cords and power strips can present a serious safety hazard. Fires usually start because of short circuits to many products plugged into the cord and damaged cords. Empower yourself with these electrical safety tips. Use extension cords only when necessary and only on a temporary basis. Don't overload a cord or power strip. Use only 3-wire extension cords for appliances with 3-prong plugs. replace cracked or worn out cords. This message is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation and KDLG.